up, y'all, and welcome back to Found Bites, a game review series. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. If you don't know about us, we're all about testing out and finding small, high-quality video games. This is a podcast that aims to respect your time and money as a gamer and a consumer by sifting through storefronts and sales to find those gems that may be worth your precious resources. If you're interested in reaching out or helping out, check out the links in the description of each episode to access our email, Twitter, website, and YouTube channel. But enough about the show, let's get into our next game. Haunty is the game for this week's episode. Haunty is a twin-stick isometric action-adventure game, and a lot of similarities to games that we've talked about before, like Hyper Light Drifter, but also ones that we've done episodes on before, like Witchwood, Cocoon, Chance of Sinnar, and Jotun. And I definitely see a lot of DNA from 3D Mario games, like Super Mario 64, Galaxy, and especially the newest 3D one, which is Super Mario Odyssey. The game was released in May of 2024 on PC, Mac, Switch, PS4 and 5, Xbox One, Series X and S. I did see something about there being a date of October of 2023. I think there may have been some early access, potentially even something on mobile, but I didn't see a lot of information on that. The game was developed by Moonloop Games, and I think this may have been their first major release. I definitely saw some information about the head developer. I don't know how small the team is, but it's definitely a small team, just about things that he's been involved in before, but I don't know if they've released a game before. The game was published by Firestoke, and they are a small indie publisher out of Scotland, and they've published a few small games, nothing of titles that I recognize. The game was released with an MSRP of $19.99, and runtime, it will take about 8 to 10 hours if you're shooting straight through, but if you're doing all the extras, being a completionist, which I certainly am, it could take you maybe close to 15 hours. And for our PlayStation listeners, this does have a Platinum Trophy, and it sits at about 5%. I think this is very doable. I've read through the trophy list. It's very completion-heavy, like doing all the things, finding all the things, collecting. So if you're a completionist, I think this is very doable. I'm probably going to get this. And so me, I've been playing it on my PlayStation 5. I got it on sale for $13.99, and I've put in probably more than 6 hours, closer to 7. I'm being very thorough. There are 4 zones, and I'm into the third zone maybe about halfway, but I have completed everything that I've gotten through, so I'm really taking my time. And so in terms of recommendation, I kind of found this on Twitter. Maybe the dev was posting with like an indie dev or indie game hashtag, but I saw this and they were posting kind of footage of their game, pictures and video, and I followed them because I really just love the art style and sort of the where the camera is. Definitely reminded me a lot of the Paper Mario games, just from the aesthetic and sort of the interactions that you have with characters and sort of the camera. But I definitely love the black and white art style and sort of the positive and negative color and how that works, so kept tabs on it, and when it came out, saw it on sale, so I jumped on it.
Thank you.
All right, let's talk gameplay for Haunty. So like we said before, this is a fixed camera. It has sort of this top-down, angular, isometric view, and it reminds me a lot of games like Transistor, basically anything that Supergiant does, but also games like Link to the Past or Trigger Witch that sort of have that top-down but at a little bit of an angle so that you can actually move in kind of a 3D space, like you're kind of able to walk behind things. So the camera is fixed, but there are times where it auto-zooms either in or out, depending on where you are, if it's a location or if it's like a cutscene or something like that. So let's get into some of the basics. So your character can move freely at one speed, so you can move in any direction. You move fairly fast, enough that it's not that you're wanting to have a run button. As you're moving around, there will be things that you can interact with, and they'll have sort of a question mark box above them, and then as you get close enough to interact with them, that question mark will turn into an exclamation point, and then a prompt will pop up that says interact. And this could be interacting with NPCs, talking to them. It could be interacting with different kiosks or stations to read something, maybe signs. Your character will have a dash ability, and when you do this, you will move pretty quickly in a straight line in whichever way you're directing, and you do move pretty far, and while you do it, I believe you are invincible, so if potentially there are projectiles being shot at you, you can dash through them, and I think you won't get hit. And then you have something else. This game is a twin stick game, which means that both of the analog sticks are doing something. So your left analog stick is obviously moving your character if you're playing on console, but the right analog stick is going to constantly be shooting things. So it has a 360 aim, and whenever you point it in any direction, it'll automatically shoot. So you'll be shooting these projectiles. They don't go too far. You'll recognize how far they go just by trial and error, but these are primarily going to be for killing enemies that you come across. They could be potentially for clearing stuff on the ground, like goop, almost like a Mario Sunshine type thing. It could be to break stuff, things in the background that might get you different collectibles or currency. And then finally, you'll be using this to possess objects, which is a main function and mechanic in this game. Obviously, it's Haunty, so ghosts possessing things, so we'll get more into that. Now, both of these abilities, the dash and the twin stick shooting thing, they both have kind of a cooldown and a refresh period. So if you look on the main screen, in the top left corner, there'll be like a little hub that'll show you a couple different meters. So the dash will have sort of like an arrow that's like a vector, and anytime you use it, that'll disappear. And then you have to wait a little bit, and then it'll refresh. And then for your shooting, there's this green spiral that's like a meter, and when you use it, it kind of unfurls and then slowly drains, and then if you drain it all the way, you won't be able to use it. You'll have to wait for it to kind of refresh back into a full spiral. So let's talk traversal and just general progression in the game. So what's interesting, as you're moving through, there are going to be walking paths. And that seems like, okay, not a big deal. Most games have some kind of pattern on the ground to maybe guide you. But these are going to be quite literal because the game is going to be very light and dark contrast. And the paths that you're on are going to be the solid white or maybe tinted another color. Regardless, they're solid colored and they're bright. And so around the paths are going to be different levels of darkness. And what you find very quickly is if you are not in the light for a short period of time, the screen will start to dim and it'll start to kind of dement, and then the sound will dement a little bit. And so what's happening is whenever you're not in the light for an extended period of time, you're going to get like sort of taken away by the darkness or the ghosts or whatever. And when you do that and you stay out there, what'll happen is you'll kind of reset back onto the light, but you'll lose like a health point. And so the game is trying to teach you very early on to stay on the walking paths. And it's kind of like a gradient, like you'll have main walking paths that'll be kind of full light, and then you'll have sort of like just the trimming around the regular path will be like mid light, it'll be kind of dimmer, or it'll have lines through it or something like that, and then you'll have just straight pitch black. And I think depending on how lit the ground you're standing on is, the speed of the darkness closing in can vary. As you're walking around, there'll also be obstructions that you'll come across. So simple things like tree roots or different breakables that are in your way that you use the shooter to get rid of, or fences that are kind of blocking your movement. These are pretty standard, but some of these are a bit buggy and janky in terms of your interaction with them. So for example, like the tree roots, like the game kind of has this, I don't know, default mechanic for whenever you're on ground that's like not stable or you're kind of not where you're supposed to be. Your character just kind of like moves a little bit and like puffs of black smoke come up, and it's telling you that like you're not like settled. And a lot of times when you're walking around or even near these things, like it'll start to do that. Like it's kind of like just a little janky there. So just be aware of that. It might be intentional, but it feels kind of buggy or unintentional. Like sort of the borders of these things aren't clear, or how to progress around them maybe isn't so clean. And there are other features that you'll come across. So there's no platforming in this game because you're not jumping, but there are definitely ramps where you can get to higher sort of catwalks. And this can be a little tough because that like stoic viewing angle, sometimes the platforms, like you have to progress in different angles or different directions. And if two platforms aren't lined up, like if one is a bit lower than the other, it's not always visually clear. And so I had a couple times where like I was going to the edge of the platform and it looked like, you know, the path was forward and we were kind of hanging up in the air, and it actually dropped down a little bit. And so I couldn't line it up correctly. So that took some trial and error. You're definitely going to fall off of ledges a bunch, sometimes intentionally, sometimes not. You don't take damage when you fall off of ledges. It's really just if you fall into pitch black, like you're obviously going to go through that routine again. And there are other things like just random springboards, maybe to like jump up and get collectibles or items or stuff like that. But you don't jump on them. You just go right into them and they'll just kind of propel you up a little bit. The game is played in these levels, which are kind of single screens, but zoomed in. So you can't see, for the most part, the full scope of the level or the screen. But you can move around as much as possible, sort of progress in this endless stream of the screen. Most of them don't have edges, but they have like endless darkness around them. So at a certain point, like you wouldn't be able to travel certain distances away from the main path. So it's an interesting way to kind of limit the levels just by the rules of the game instead of like having physical boundaries. And when you're in these levels, you can explore, you can collect different things. There are shops for you to buy certain things. You can talk to NPCs if they're there. What's interesting is that there aren't designated levels that are like safe zones or levels that have enemies. Like you can go to a town, but there will be things that you can interact with and all of a sudden enemies will come out. Like you can constantly be shooting things. Most of the NPCs, like you're not going to do them any harm. So you're going to definitely have all things available in any level, no matter what. Even if it says like it's a town, it'll still potentially have enemies. As you're progressing through these levels, there are going to be different currencies scattered around. There's sort of a main one that is used in all of the different zones, and we'll talk about zones, that can be used to buy things. There are these like triangles. There are some currencies that are zone specific. So think like Super Mario Odyssey or Donkey Kong 64. Like when you're in these sets of levels, you'll only be collecting this zone specific currency to be able to spend in this zone. But you'll always be collecting the main currency. You'll also be collecting possession power things that are like a meter in your top left corner. And we'll talk about this when we get to possession powers. But basically, you're going to find these a lot. These are like these purple like teardrops with sad faces on them that I guess are supposed to be like ghosts. But these are something that you'll definitely collect a lot of and you'll be using and running through a bunch. So anytime you see them, feel free to collect them. And a lot of what you're going to be buying are cosmetics. So your character can equip different hats. When you go to a save point, you can go into a little menu that has all the hats that you've either collected or bought, and then you can swap them. They don't give you abilities. They're purely cosmetic. But there is a trophy for, I believe, collecting all the hats. And each of these levels is going to have multiple exits that will transport to other levels. And you will have sort of a general map that shows the different levels kind of in a sequence where they are in relation to each other, and then how many of the exits that you've discovered that connect to other paths. So you'll see the connections and they'll give you a vague sense of just like generally how the level looks, where the different exits are. So if you are looking to get like to this next level and you've already opened that exit, you might have a vague sense of where in the level it will be. But the map is not going to be that much more helpful to you because it doesn't actually give you a landscape of the level that you're in or like the general scope. Like we said, that camera's going to kind of be fixed. And so you're not really going to get a whole view of the level, which kind of encourages you to walk around and explore more. Sometimes the exits in different levels are going to be locked depending on if they're after you beat a certain boss. Some of them you might need to collect a certain number of stars, which we're going to talk about. So that kind of gets into how you progress through. You'll have to get certain things to open up certain things. So let's talk about collecting stars. So this is right out of the 3D Mario formula. You're going to be collecting different stars, and each level has a specific number that are available, and if you go on the map, you'll see how many each level has, and you'll actually be able to cycle through to the ones that you don't have, and it'll give like a title for the star, just like in Super Mario 64 or Odyssey or whatever. If you look at these, the title kind of reveals a little bit vaguely about what has to be done and the location. So for example, one might be like grave robbing or something like that. And so you'll know that when you're in that level, you go to the graveyard and something over there is going to be what you're interacting with. Or other things like that, like ride the roller coaster or fireworks near the carousel or something like that. So it kind of is trying to help you. Again, you're not seeing the full scope of the level, but you are getting a little context. And as you're walking around and exploring this limited space, you are kind of seeing things and putting two and two together. And the majority of what you're going to do to collect these stars is going to be puzzling and exploration. So some of these things might be as simple as like defeating enemy hordes in a specific location. It could be possessing objects or characters to do certain things. There's definitely some time sequence stuff. Think like in Super Mario 64 or whatever, like the red coins there. Like once you get one of them, like you have to get the rest in sequence or something like that. Maybe those are the blue coins in Odyssey. But you'll also have NPCs that give you side quests that might say like, oh, I can't find my dog or something like that. And so you'll have to explore a little bit. And if you find it, like you bring the dog over. The side quests aren't written down, so you will have to remember it in that level. But as long as you stay within that level or just keep talking to NPCs, you can remember what you need to do. And then some other things might be like mini games. So there is a recurring mini game. There are some recurring NPC quests, but a lot of just run-of-the-mill things that you might see in a 3D Mario game in terms of what you need to do to collect stars. Now let's talk about the possession mechanic. So this is going to be a really big deal because you're using your right analog stick to shoot things, but you can also shoot things and then what'll happen is a meter will pop up with like a yellow squiggly, and when you fill that, you will possess that thing. So you're going to constantly be running around and trial and error and shooting everything, and if you happen to shoot something and that meter pops up, that's telling you that, hey, you can possess this thing. And there's a real great variety of the different things you can possess. And so, once again, it's going to be trial and error because you might not expect certain things. Some of the initial levels are going to be pretty basic, like you can possess trees, which might not seem like a big deal, but you can shake the trees and a lot of currency might fall out. Also, what might fall out are actually these like stars of light. And they'll spread out in sort of the immediate area, and they'll actually create like circles of white path that you can stand on. And if they happen to fall in the middle of the darkness, all of a sudden you've like put another space there where you can stand and the darkness won't get you. So if you see like a bunch of trees sort of in the middle of the darkness, you might run to them and try to possess them and shake out these like things of light so that you can stand further away from the path. And you might actually find secrets here or different things to collect. It really opens up what you can do by possessing things and seeing what they're able to do. You'll also see ladybugs climbing on trees, and you find that you can possess them and actually jump tree to tree. So some of the collectibles might be on the outside of a tree and you need to climb it with a ladybug. There are eventually going to be like these moving turrets or like these things that shoot things that can hit you, but they're just kind of walking around aimlessly. They're not like intentionally going after you, but you can possess a lot of these. So you're going to find things that will shoot different projectiles or be able to do different things like jump really high. And once you possess these things, that currency that you found, those like purple little teardrops, you're going to have to expend these to do whatever the ability of that thing is. And they're all going to have a varied cost. So for example, when you possess a tree, it's going to cost one of those currencies to shake it. But some of the other things, like the one creature that like jumps really high and then you can ground pound, like that costs, I think, 3 or 2. So depending on what the thing is and what the ability it can do and what kind of damage it can do, it's going to have a varying cost. And then so you have to keep an eye on how much of that currency you have, but there's certainly going to be a lot that you're collecting. A lot of these abilities are going to be kind of lock and key. Again, very Super Mario Odyssey inspired. So if you recall the mechanic from that game, you have the hat and you can possess different things. So the developer of this game actually cites that as a massive inspiration. And you can definitely feel it here because the variety of what you're doing, what's possible, definitely feels like it's right out of that. So as you're moving along and you're collecting these stars, you're kind of getting into one of the main mechanics for progressing in this game. You are in these different levels, and these levels are kind of grouped into zones. So for example, like the forest zone or the carnival zone or whatever, each of these will have like 5 or 6 levels that are a part of that zone. So as you're going through it, you're getting that zone specific currency in all those levels, and then you're collecting stars by doing puzzles or defeating enemies or exploring. Once you're in that zone, you might come across sort of a kiosk that's a constellation map. And when you get there, what you find is that in that zone, there are a certain number of constellations that you have to complete. And you complete them by taking these stars that you've collected and putting in them into the constellation. Now, the size of the constellation varies. Some of them only require 3. Some of them might require up to 7 stars. But however many stars you collect, you can come back to these kiosks and put in stars and complete different constellations. Anytime you complete a constellation, you will receive an upgrade piece. And we'll talk about the different upgrades, but basically you need a certain number of pieces to do one of the upgrades to your character. And each zone is going to have a specific number of constellations that you need to complete in order to progress through that zone, pretty much to open up the way to the boss. So you're collecting stars, you're using the kiosk to complete constellations, and then that's allowing you to progress, beat the boss, and then move on to the next zone potentially. And so when you receive these upgrade pieces, you have a choice. You can either upgrade your essence, your dash, or your hearts. So anytime you complete a constellation, you can choose between one of those 3 to get a piece of them. And for each of them, the essence is going to be sort of that spiral. It's like a meter for how much of your twin stick shooting that you can do before you have to let it refresh. For dashing, like, you'll get an extra arrow, so you can, you know, do 2 dashes in a row or something like that. And then obviously hearts is an extra heart container, but you're only getting a piece. And the essence and the dash require 3 pieces to get an upgrade, but the heart upgrade only requires 2 pieces. So you can kind of trial and error, max and min, whichever you want to use for that. So if you're being super thorough as you're going through these levels, you can actually collect a lot of stars. And then so you potentially could be upgrading your character pretty quickly if you are being thorough and kind of completionist. Now, on that topic, in terms of pacing, there are some things that can kind of gate how you're progressing. So for example, there's kind of a bottleneck of star collecting. And so what I mean is that as you're progressing through these different levels within these different zones, you can accrue a lot more stars than you're able to put into constellations. So for example, like we said, there's only a certain number of constellations you have to complete in order to open up the boss door for that zone. And then I think depending on the zone, it'll provide you with a couple extra constellations to put stars into. However, there are a lot more stars that you can collect before you have access to more constellations to put them in. So again, if you're a completionist, and I've been very thorough, I haven't moved on to another zone unless I got all the stars in the previous one, but I was in a bottleneck multiple times. And so what I found was I was collecting a lot of stars, and then I was just waiting to get into the next zone and find that constellation kiosk to start throwing in stars to get upgrades. And it even got to the point where when I was in a new zone, as soon as I got to the first kiosk, I put in all of the stars and basically completed the whole constellation map for that zone and opened up the next way to progress. So I don't know if that's intentional in terms of like the game is meaning for you to kind of just go with the story and not try to be a completionist, because I do know that at some point you do get fast travel in this game. I think it's like really close to the end of the game. I'm halfway through the third zone and I haven't gotten it yet, but I think a way to kind of combat being, you know, I don't want to say over leveled, but like having a lot of upgrades and trivializing some of the bosses is by sort of bottlenecking. So what they're doing here. So I do appreciate it. I understand why they do that, just so that you can't like be a completionist and just barrel through this game. But at times it could be like a slight balancing issue, maybe not have so many extra different stars to collect in some of these other zones. And so other things, what is interesting is that the different zones or like chapters in the game are varied length. So like the first zone is definitely not as long as the second zone, but like the third zone, it's kind of an uneven length in times. And I actually really like this because it's not formulaic progression. I feel like it's very welcome to me. I don't necessarily need games to all have levels that are the same length. I think that can maybe be a bit too rigid. I like that it kind of progresses with whatever's happening in the story. So certain parts are going to be longer because depending on where you are in the story arc, like this part takes longer. And it actually reminds me a lot of the original Paper Mario. If you've played that game, like for example, like the third chapter or level is when you have to go to the Boo house and like solve things in the Boo house before you actually go to the third castle. But it's actually not a castle. Like you have to go and you have to find, I think his name is Tubba Blubba, and then you have to find his heart, which is separate from him. And so it's actually not a traditional dungeon. I like that there are multiple locations, like it's a bit longer and you feel like removed in this other area, but it doesn't feel like, oh, I have to go to another castle and just kill the boss and then I have it. So I like that, especially because after that level, when you come back to town, all of a sudden the Shy Guys are loose and then you have to go like get people's items back or tools back and you have to go into the toy box. So I just like that the disparity between level length or zone length or chapter length, I think it just adds more character to the game and not trying to just be like, here's a dungeon, here's a boss, here's a dungeon, here's a boss, equal length. There's also great variability in the puzzles and the possessions that you have to, you know, trial and error or find out. Again, early in the game, you're kind of testing what can be possessed and discovering the abilities of different things. Like not all trees have the same abilities, or some other tall objects have different things that they can do. And then as you get further into the game, I really just like the synergy of that compounding with the different enemies that you see or the different things that you can possess that are moving things that can shoot projectiles, because sometimes you'll find enemies that require some of these different things to possess to kill them. Some of them might be flying up in the air. Some of them might be on the ground and require like a shotgun spread or something. And so you actually find these scenarios where you're switching between multiple things to possess just to deal with different enemies kind of all put in the same small area. And in terms of accessibility, I just like the idea of, you know, there are things that you have to do, like collecting a certain number of stars, but there's a ton of extras. You can be thorough or not. You can be a completionist or not in this game. I actually feel like the challenges lie in some of the toughest stars to get, like the roller coaster one actually took me quite a bit, but you don't have to get it. Like there are other ways to get your stars to progress through the game. So I really like that. There are save checkpoints, which are like these kind of triangle things that eventually shatter and sit as squares on the ground. And anytime you get near them, they'll autosave for you. I think maybe like max one per level. I find that when you go to a new level or especially a new zone, there'll probably be one right at the beginning there for you. So anytime you walk by it, that'll autosave for you. And in terms of hearts and dying, like you do start with 3 hearts. If you get hit by an enemy, depending on the enemy, you might lose a full heart, you might lose a half. But dying is interesting because if you are caught in the darkness, you will actually lose 1 heart and then just go back to the last time that you were on light or the path. But if you lose all your hearts, what you'll do is you'll just come back to the last save point that you saved at. And so I think I died maybe 5 to 10 times for whatever reason, maybe in a boss battle, maybe on some of the puzzles. But I would say in terms of difficulty, the game is not that difficult. I think you'll overcome it in time. A lot of it is just puzzles. There's not a lot of skill-based stuff. I mean, sometimes you might have enemy encounters, but for the most part, it's really manageable. It's not relying on you, you know, doing all kinds of quick movement. You could possess things, you could shoot things, but really for the most part, you're just looking for the best way to solve certain situations. Let's talk about the vibe of Haunty. And let's start with the visuals, because this is definitely what struck me the first time I saw it. So there's a black and white palette here. I think this is interesting. It's definitely something we don't see a lot of. It has like a very positive negative vibe to it, like almost like the negative of a photograph. I think it's very effective, especially for the lore. There's definitely a lot of light and dark, but obviously the light-dark mechanic, if you're in the light, if you're in the dark, again, I feel like it's a nice creative way to develop boundaries without actually having physical boundaries. I think visually it winds up simplifying what you're seeing, but I think that they do a lot of things to make intricate visuals still pop and be possessed. It definitely creates the illusion of 3D models. Again, think isometric, think like Paper Mario, like you can be behind objects, kind of more of the camera angle, but it still plays with that sort of light and dark, positive, negative space. I do think it's easy to spot objects and paths because of the positive negative, the light dark. Like you definitely notice when there's a path or when there's an area that you're going to be able to step on and not be in darkness. So sometimes you will actually sort of test the waters a little bit, go off the path, and then maybe dash and see if you see another light spot that you can maybe get to before the darkness gets you. The characters and the enemies, the shapes, they're super goofy. I love the variation of the different characters that you see and their sizes. Some are really small. Some are these giant blobs. A lot of them have no limbs. Some are tall. Some are round. Some have one eye or something about their eyes is strange. Some of them will just be like a blob with a mustache. And a lot of what you're doing is you're kind of this blob with like the bottom of you almost looking like a flag in the wind. And you're going to be wearing hats because you're going to be collecting them as you go across and explore and use currency. So the different hats are going to sit on your character. They don't always sit right. But again, this is really just cosmetic. So you'll find a nice hat that you like. I definitely like the witch's hat or the jester. The animation of your characters and the NPCs are really interesting. There's a little bit of Steamboat Willie vibe, mainly just because it's the black-white contrast. They don't move that jovially. They're a bit more rigid in how they fidget. They definitely have like a grainier sense to them. And even as they move, like there's some things that might happen under them. It reminds me a lot of like Peanuts or like Charlie Brown. Like things aren't like completely outlined. Like there might be something missing on the outline. Not everything is like perfectly put together. It definitely translates a lot of like Charlie Brown if it were like just black and white contrast. The environments. So this is interesting because you're not going to have a lot of background because you have sort of that top-down angle view. But what you're going to see in the environments is definitely zone dependent. The tint of the zone is going to be different. Like the forest is going to have like a green tint to the white light places. The carnival is going to have like a little bit of a blue tint. Some of them are going to have varied structures. Like there's going to be a lot of large mushrooms in the forest or in the carnival. Like you're going to see a lot of roller coaster tracks. Definitely a lot of verticality in that area. Some tents that are pretty tall, but then you're going to have some zones that kind of have no structures, like this one that's kind of like a desert sand vibe, and there's just not a lot. There's maybe some ruins, but there's actually a lot of empty space. So I do like the variation there, as well as the different currencies of the zones. So they're going to be different objects like coins or leaves, and they're going to be colored a little bit differently, and that tint of the level is kind of going to carry over to the currencies. And then some effects that you're seeing visually are going to be very important because they're communicating to you. For the most part, anytime you see an enemy, they're going to have some kind of red around them. Almost looks like a digital cage or something like that. And then the things that they shoot, the projectiles, these balls of black that are kind of have like red lightning around them. It reminds me a lot of like Nier Automata and the different like digital kind of corrupted aspects of the enemies. Things sparkling is going to be a very big deal, a very big indicator, especially if a possessable object is sparkling. That pretty much means that you need to possess it and then like shake it or whatever. And there's probably a star in there. So sparkling things are going to be an indication that there's a star around. So if you're doing a lot of exploring and you're just walking through and you come to an area where something is sparkling, look at the map and look at the different stars that are available and you'll probably find some kind of vague title to a star that's going to give you some clue about what to do with that thing. And then also the camera will pan automatically. And this is very interesting because when you come to certain places in a level, it might show you the scale of the whole level so you can see it. Often where you like just walk in, there's a space where you can stand where it'll zoom out and show you everything. So that's kind of in lieu of having a map. Like most levels will have a space like that that you can stand to see more of it. But they're not always going to show you the whole level. Sometimes the camera will auto focus if there's like a secret puzzle that needs to be in an area. This is actually a good indicator that like something needs to happen here. And again, going back and looking at the star list and what the titles are for some of them might give you a clue as to what to do there. And then other things, as you go off path, like I said, the light kind of distorts a little bit because you're in the darkness and it's slowly consuming you. And what you're going to start to see are like these purple faces coming out of the darkness. You really just see like the eyes and the mouth, almost like a jack-o'-lantern, kind of like the inverse like Haunter or Gengar or something like that, those Pokemon. And that can be pretty terrifying. In terms of audio, love the music in this game. Really love it. It's fun. It's a lot of somber stuff. It's interesting because no matter what the melody or what the song is, there's always going to be these constant undertones of like eerie or cavernous or sort of longing. And that's something that's interesting because we're going to get into the themes of obviously you being a ghost, but it always has that undertone like reminding you that like, hey, you're still a ghost or despite whatever you're doing. A lot of soft sounds, meaningful piano, meaningful strings, sometimes fun or silly percussion kind of thrown in there. It's got this meaningful vibe that would come from like a Journey, but then this playful vibe that might come from like a Paper Mario. So kind of the cross between those. And then audio effects. Anytime that you use something or release something, whether it's like your dash ability or something like that, or you're collecting something in sequence, like you'll get audio feedback that's really helpful, especially for the dash ability, because you hear it come back instead of having to look at your HUD to make sure that you have your dash back. And then of course, when you're in that darkness, the light is distorting, but also the sound is distorting. And it's often the notification that you get before, like that's what you realize first, because you hear the sound starting to like lower in pitch. It's like, oh, I'm not in light. I need to get into a light space. And in terms of theme and setting, so you're a ghost. And you're dealing with death and dying. You're kind of in this afterlife. I don't know if you'd quite call it purgatory, but everything that might come with that, the self-realizations of understanding what's going on, because you're kind of new to this and you're like, oh, I don't know, how did I get here? There's some interesting stuff with the NPCs. They're almost like factions that are going on behind the scenes, like the ghosts and then the angels. So the ghosts are in all black and there are angels in all white. So again, that dark versus light definitely coming through in the themes. And a lot of these people, it's interesting with where they are at because they're all ghosts and they want to stay as ghosts. And that's super interesting because you're in these fun locations, like you're in the carnival zone. And a lot of them are just like, why would I want to leave? I love being here. I love purgatory. I love the afterlife or whatever. And so that gets into something a little deeper, which is this idea of self. And the game really tries to tackle this in interesting ways because a lot of these characters are forgetting who they are or why they're here, and they kind of don't care. And this kind of goes along with you because you don't have an idea of who you are. But as you're going through this game, you're collecting stars, and these stars are actually parts of you, parts of who your character was, and memories of them. And so actually, anytime that you put together stars into a constellation, yes, you get an upgrade reward, but you actually see a little cutscene that is a very vague memory of something that happened in your life. And this reminds me a lot of Iris and the Giant, because they did something very similar as you're going through some of the levels, like you're trying to get the memories, and then you'll watch a little cutscene that colors in a little bit of the story. So same thing here, especially visually, it's very minimalistic. It's like a white screen and the characters are just like almost like the people that are on the restroom signs. Like they don't really have any character, or you're just kind of surmising who they are or who they are to you. And you get all that context if you really just look at it and kind of take it all in. But this idea of like you're going out collecting these stars to recollect who you are, these pieces of yourself, and potentially, you know, get out of here and go to the good place, as it might be called. It's really tough in this game because there is this balance of lighthearted fun and meaningfulness, both in the characters and what they're trying to experience, but also in what you're experiencing with the visuals, the music especially. There are a lot of silly characters and situations and puzzles. Some of the dialogue you read might give you a nice little chuckle. But then your boss battles, these could be characters that are kind of cruel and, you know, have opposing intentions for what you're trying to do. So this balance of fun and meaningfulness, I think, really intertwines and brings to life your experience, but also the experience of the characters in the game. All right, let's wrap up the conversation about Haunty. So I love this experience, and I'm not finished. I'm in the third zone. I feel like I'm definitely going to platinum this game. But I started out excited because I knew that I had seen the visuals. I had been keeping tabs on this game and the concept art. I was excited to jump into it. I was a little wary in the first like 10 to 20 minutes. I was worried it was going to be too simple, or it was just going to be like sort of just walking around and exploration based and story and stuff like that. But once I started to see the collecting and the upgrades and what you're exploring and the different challenges and puzzles, I really fell into this and I really decided, like, I know I'm going to love this game. And I definitely love the obvious inspiration from Super Mario Odyssey. And definitely I read the developer interview where he talked about this exact inspiration. So love all of those things. For me, the game definitely scratches an itch, that completionist, that collector. Again, I think I'm going to get this platinum trophy. I think this is a nice platinum trophy to get, and I think I'll feel accomplished, although not a lot of skill challenge trophies in this, although some of the mini games are actually pretty tough. Definitely some bugginess and some jank with the movement or getting trapped in something or walking over something. Also, some of the possessed abilities of some of the things that you will possess. Like there's a bat where you can flap your wings a certain amount of time and, you know, fly up. Some of this was a bit interesting. I don't know if it was intentionally like you're cheesing. But some of the things that I was able to do, I felt like it might have been a little buggy or unintentional. At least it wasn't obvious that I could do it. But overall, I think the game has a great balance of fun, silly, playfulness, and that heartfelt, meaningful kind of moment. And I feel a lot of kinship with the first Paper Mario game, because that game was fun, silly, like they got the humor, they nailed it, but also something about the stars and their relationship with Mario was just so heartfelt and meaningful. And I think those two things intertwined at the right balance can just make for such an incredible experience. In terms of value, I think $20 is nice for this game. I'm actually surprised at the length and the depth. I mean, I am going through and I, again, feel like I only put in 6 or 7 hours, but it definitely feels like I've been doing a lot in this game. Like there's a lot of depth that's really sinking into me, but the time is not going by as fast as I thought, but it feels like I'm getting a lot of value here. Anytime this game is on sale, definitely a steal, but I think $20 is still a nice value for what's in here. And again, the game is just full of charm. It has this unique combination of the setting, of death, of light and dark, but just the visuals especially, like it's really just a black and white color palette, and you get so much from this and from the characters. And so I do recommend that people play this game. I feel like it's good for all levels, whether you're into games like this or not, or you like more walking around games than solving puzzles. I think it's kind of best of both worlds here. And so I do highly recommend that you play this game. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Stay tuned for our next episode to see what new game we found for you.